good morning, everybody. I'm so glad that you're here. We have a friend, her name is Allison, and Allison is a busy homeschooling mom who has the personality and energy to match two very energetic kids. Known her for a number of years. She's quick to laugh, she is full of life, and she's genuinely one of these people that's fun to be around. I enjoy when I get a chance to catch up with her from time to time. But Allison also has dreams, and I don't mean the dreams like, I have dreams for my life. No. She has dreams while she's sleeping. I mean like really bizarre dreams. Like climb on the back of a polar bear and ride it through a forest covered in American flags kind of weird dreams. Okay, the kind of weird dreams that not only are you questioning what she had for dinner, but her entire diet, okay? That kind of crazy sort of dreams. And from time to time, she'll send me a text message where she describes one of these dreams, and I'm just like, oh my goodness, I don't even know what to do with some of that. A few years ago, she shared a vision for, I think, she was talking about Thrive Church, she was talking about me, but she shared a vision where she saw the bridge of a starship, like the Starship Enterprise from Star Trek. And there were people who were coming and going, and those of you who watch Star Trek, I just wanted to make sure that if I showed up in the dream, I wasn't wearing the red shirt, okay? She didn't tell me that, so anyway. But she saw this bridge, and people were coming and going, and there was an idea that they were training there, and then they were going somewhere else, and I had no idea what it meant at the time. Neither did she. But years later, I was talking with a colleague about, we call it church metrics, and what are the things that we measure? Because what gets measured gets done, right? We all know this. And the question was, what should we measure? And it dawned on me that the vision that my friend Allison had was really the metric. The metric for me is, who am I equipping and sending? Now, I don't know if every other church or every other pastor has that same type of mandate, but it was very clear that that was for me, and it happened a year before I finally figured it out, which, by the way, means that I'm just not the sharpest tool in the drawer, okay? I mean, it's just, I understand that. But sometimes it takes me a while to get to the point where God, but the other beautiful thing is, what kind of God tells you that a year in advance, right? It's just such a beautiful thing. But that idea of that metric radically changed my perspective on what I'm doing and why I'm doing it, and in this series, we're talking about how God communicates with his people. And there's four primary channels. Let me just remind you where they are, of what they are. One is hearing. We talked about that last week. The second one is seeing. The third one is feeling. And the fourth one is knowing. These are channels that God uses to communicate to his people. And all of us have the ability to receive communication in any one of those channels, but most of us have one in particular that's kind of our go-to. It's the one that's most comfortable for us. It's the one that God will regularly use in our specific lives. And my friend Allison happens to be a seer. She sees things. And really what that means is that she has, of course, dreams, but pictures or images while she's praying, and sometimes visions, and you know, obviously they can be quite vivid from time to time, and it's a really an interesting sort of phenomenon within the church, because we like hearers, we like people who get that clear communication from God with words and sentences, and sometimes even the audible voice. But seers they're a breed apart, because they do have the weird dreams, and it gets our attention, and we tend to take the people who see and we hold them up too, and we go, oh my goodness, you know, can you imagine that image? Or can you imagine that picture? And the Old Testament is actually full of seers. I'm just gonna pick one. It's the one you probably would think of if you spent a little bit of time thinking about it yourself, and it's Joseph. Joseph in the amazing Technicolor dream coat, right? You know this one. But let me just read this for you. This is in Genesis chapter 37. I want to read just a couple of little pieces of this story, and you'll see exactly what I mean. This is the account of Jacob. Hang on. Got to flip the page. All right. Jacob lived in the land where his father had stayed, the land of Canaan. This is the account of Jacob. Joseph, a young man of 17, was tending the flocks with his brothers, the sons of Bilhah, and the sons of Zilpah, his father's wives. And he brought their father a bad report about them. Now Israel loved Joseph more than any of his other sons, because he had been born to him in his old age. And he made a richly ornamental robe for him. And his brothers saw that their father loved him more than any of them, and they hated him and could not speak a kind word about him. Okay, so there's the background story, all right? Verse 5, Joseph had a dream. And when he told his brothers, they hated him all the more. This is what he said. Listen to this dream I had. We were binding sheaves of grain out in the field when suddenly my sheaf rose and stood upright while your sheaves gathered around mine and bowed down to it. This is the picture of an immature seer, okay? Sometimes wisdom says, shut your mouth. Don't say anything about that. Not every vision that you get, you need to share, right? You have to decide who it's for. Verse 9, then he had another dream. Uh-oh. And he told his brothers, listen, he said, I had another dream, and this time the sun and the moon and 11 stars were bowing down to me. Yeah. Imagine a culture where there's no television, there's no, you know, regular sorts of entertainment, and you live out in the fields, and you're spending a lot of time outside, and one of the most spectacular things you could possibly set your eyes on are the sun and the moon and the stars. And here your little brother is shooting his mouth off once again, saying, oh yeah, all those really cool things, they're bound down to me. Again, this is an immature seer. Not every message is for everybody. And you, of course, know the rest of the story, right? I mean, his brothers get so angry. What do? They sell him into slavery, and he's taken to Egypt. And eventually he's put into prison, accused of a crime that he didn't commit. And he's left there to rot for a period of time. But some of his fellow prisoners have dreams. Now, what's interesting about seers is that very often, because they have the ability to have dreams and visions, they are able to interpret the dreams and visions of other people. Not always, but it is a common phenomenon between those two things. And of course, Joseph is right there and handy, and he interprets the dream, and they come true. And again, he's left in prison to rot until Pharaoh has a dream. And one of the individuals that Joseph met in prison remember the fact that Joseph could interpret dreams, and so he's brought before Pharaoh, and you know the rest of the story. Seers, visionaries, dreamers. Interpretation is often connected with seeing. You know, it's interesting to me, I was thinking about that a little bit later, when you have the person who has the ability to envision things but then has the ability to interpret them, there's a part of me that says that it's God's mercy that does that, because sometimes if you're only seeing the visions, it could probably drive you a little crazy. And I don't mean that in the sort of casual sense of the word. I do think insanity is a possibility with that. And so God, in his blessing, is allowing people to be able to interpret some of those dreams just so that they avoid insanity. I think that's true. The prophet Joel also talked about this as well. You might remember this. This is Joel chapter 2, verse 28. And afterward, I will pour out my spirit on all people. Your sons and daughters will prophesy. Your old men will dream dreams. Your young men will see visions. Even on my servants, both men and women, I will pour out my spirit in those days. And so you have to remember, Joel is sitting in between kind of the end of the Old Testament and right before the New Testament, and God is talking to his people, and he's saying, look, there's going to be a time when my spirit is going to come not just upon my individual prophets, but on all people, men and women. And these are some of the things that you'll see. And of course, there are dreams and visions. And so we know that this type of seeing that we find in our church today is actually a fulfillment of that particular prophecy. And if that doesn't convince you, that's fine. I have more. Let's go to Acts chapter 10. And here you might remember this story. At Caesarea, there was a man named Cornelius, a centurion in what was known as the Italian regiment. He and all his family were devout and God-fearing. He gave generously to those in need and prayed to God regularly. One day at about 3 p.m, he had a vision. Interesting. He distinctly saw an angel of God who came to him and said, Cornelius. And Cornelius stared at him in fear. What is it, Lord? He asked. The angel answered, your prayers and gifts to the poor have come up as a memorial offering before God. Now send men to Joppa to bring back a man named Simon, who is called Peter. He is staying with Simon the tanner, whose house is by the sea. When the angel who spoke to him had gone, Cornelius called two of his servants and a devout soldier who was one of his attendants, and he told them everything that had happened and sent them to Joppa. Now, you might remember this, that there's Peter at Cornelius's house. And here it happens. Now remember, this is on one day at about 3 p.m. About noon the following day, as they were on their journey and approaching the city, Peter went up on the roof to pray. So he's in Joppa, and he's staying with Simon the tanner. He's up on the roof. He's praying. He became hungry and wanted something to eat. And while the meal was being prepared, he fell into a trance. He saw heaven opened and something like a large sheet being let down to earth by its four corners. It contained all kinds of four-footed animals as well as reptiles of the earth and birds of the air. Then a voice told him, get up, Peter, kill and eat. Now, Peter, being a good Jew, said, surely not, Lord. I have never eaten anything impure or unclean. And the voice spoke to him a second time. Do not call anything impure that God has made clean. This happened three times. Can you imagine having that same? Have you ever had one of those dreams like you just can't quite wake up and you're having the same dream over and over again? I can't stand when that happens. The only thing to do is to get up and go into the kitchen. I'm telling you, that's what does it, okay? But here's, he's got the same thing. It's happening a couple of different times. It happened three times. And immediately the sheet was taken back into heaven. While Peter was wondering about the meaning of the vision, the men sent by Cornelius found out where Simon's house was and stopped at the gate. They called out asking if Simon, who was known as Peter, was staying there. And of course it sets up Peter going to Cornelius' house and the entire family coming to know Jesus. It's an interesting thing. So here we have an Old Testament attestation to it, but also the prophet saying that this is going to continue. And of course, then we see Simon Peter going through this as well as Cornelius, who is a Gentile. He is not a Jewish person. He has been around them and was God-fearing, and so Jesus revealed himself to Cornelius. And so we have this sense within the text that there are those who see visions and dream dreams, and it's a primary way, or one of the primary ways, that God speaks to his people, which I think is fascinating. Seers can be a lot of fun, to be frank, because they see the world differently and they can be very excitable about it. I've noticed this about the people who I know who see things. They're very excitable. And the dreams... the dreams that other people have that they think are just bizarre are perfectly normal for people who see. They're like, oh, yeah, well, yeah. It's like it doesn't faze them at all. You know, you're wondering about the radish juice and carrot juice that you mixed together the night before, and you wake up with that weird feeling, and who put these socks on my teeth? And, you know, and you might have had those dreams, but the person who is a seer will be perfectly fine with it. And they find it terribly interesting, and they want to talk to you about it, and they'll ask you a bunch of questions, and they want to know every little detail, and you don't might even remember the details, but they do. And the seer will often envision completed things. So it's not like they envision the process that they have to go through, but they'll actually see whatever the event is or the project, they'll see it in its completed fashion, and they'll see it in vivid and absolute detail about it. Could be a building, it could be spaces or events or projects or something like that. And what this does for them is it inspires great faith because they've already seen it as if it has already occurred. And so they have no boundaries on what God can and cannot do or will not do because they've seen the final product, and that just motivates them. Their faith and that excitement they have can be very, very contagious. And it's no wonder that oftentimes seers and visionaries are the ones who have movements of people behind them. And the other thing that seers will often do is they'll bring supernatural solutions. They'll bring solutions that only God can actually do, which can be both exciting and very intimidating for people. And so they have to walk this fine line on how much are they supposed to communicate and when, which is obviously what Joseph showed us, because not every vision is for everybody. And so they have to demonstrate, or they have to pursue a certain amount of wisdom and a certain amount of maturity in how they share those pictures or those images. There's a couple of cautions here, though, too, for anybody who sees, who has that as their primary channel. Because they see something that isn't there yet, they can have trouble articulating the picture or the dream. I mean, does that make sense? Because their words are going to fail the thing that's in their head. As a person who makes a living with words, I've had that problem from time to time. I remember, just as kind of an example of this, is we took a trip out west in October, and we were in Utah at one of the national parks, and I simply did not have the words to describe how big it was. And sometimes I think that's, and even the pictures that we took, I mean, just failed to do the vastness of what we were looking at. And that's kind of how I feel about seers when they're trying to articulate the visions. They see the massiveness of it, and they just don't have the words to describe it all. And so in this case, patience for them is a sign or a mark of maturity, and they have to be patient with people because they might not be able to articulate everything as much as they would like to, and so they have to bring people along piece by piece as they try to lead back towards whatever God is trying to do. And also, like hearers, seers get a picture. Usually it's the final product. And so they don't, like I said, they don't have the idea of the process that you have to go through to get it, so they struggle with the day-to-day stuff. Have you ever met a person who's kind of like that? They're sort of a visionary leader, and they get a little frustrated with the day-in and day-out tasks. I have to admit, I sometimes struggle with the day-to-day tasks because I have kind of a picture in my head, and I'm not necessarily a seer the way that we're talking about here, but I get some ideas in my head, but the process of getting to it is slow and ponderous, and there's daily tasks, and I'm like, there's so many more interesting things to do than daily tasks. Like, let's see what's on YouTube, shall we, or whatever. But that can happen with seers as well. It's best for them to ask God for who, not how. Because very often God will give that picture, but God also likes to work with bodies of people. Paul talks about this, right? The elbow can't be the eye, and the eye can't be the kneecap, and the kneecap can't be the big toe. That's my version of it. But the point is, we're a body, and we're all working on this thing together, and so God will give a little bit to this person and a little bit to that person and require us to do this together because he wants us to be in community with one another. And again, as God communicates to his people, seers play an important part of that. Sometimes we need somebody with that big picture that has a sense of what this thing could possibly look like. And so if you're working with someone who has that sort of seeing ability, those images, one of the things you can do to help them is to have them write down what they see. I read one author who said that it's really helpful to have a vision board. Do you know what a vision board is? You get a big piece of cardboard or something like you used to do in your school projects, right? You see, you never thought that was going to be worth something, right? But you got to go to a Walmart and you got to get the big, you know, cardboard poster board, right? And you can get whatever color you want. And a vision board is when you find pictures in magazines, you rip them out and whatever that picture is, and you start putting them up there and you write the words on them. It's a vision board. But you can help a seer do that so that people can get a sense of what they're talking about. That may or may not be useful, but I think that it is. Any time that you can get a little bit closer to describing the vision is going to be easier for everybody else. It's going to be easier for the body to rally around the image that God has given you. And also, if you believe that that vision is from God, if you believe that what they're seeing is truly driven by the Almighty, then the best thing you can do is help them build a team, help them build some community around it, especially when you can find those people who can execute and make things happen. I remember when we started Thrive Church and I went through an assessment, and one of the things they told me is that I was highly relational, but I needed some people around me who were drivers, who would get things done. And God brought me Dan. And I was so thankful for that, because Dan gets things done, and he's helped me learn how to do execution and to do execution better than I used to. And I really appreciate that about him. So if you're wondering, maybe if you're a seer, do you get strange or powerful dreams that have nothing to do with what you're eating the night before? That's a great question to ask. But the other thing to do, and this is the case of any way that God communicates, is you got to go back again and look at your origin story. How did you come to faith? For some people, there was a picture. There's an interesting story that just occurred to me. John Wimber used to talk about this. But John Wimber used to hear God, and he saw someone in a college class, if I remember right, and the God was telling him that he needed to go and talk to this guy. And somehow they crossed paths at some point during the semester, and started a conversation, and this guy was talking about how he knew that God was kind of knocking on his door, but he just didn't know. He had a lot of questions, and so Wimber continued to talk to him, and finally the guy said, "Why are you doing this?" And he says, "I'm trying to get you born again, and I'm the midwife." And the man said to him, "How did you know that?" Just burst out into tears. He says, "What do you mean? How did I know what?" And he said, "I'm a nurse, and I've worked in the OB ward." And that was the image that he needed in that moment to help him come to faith, that God was speaking his language, right? In his origin story, there's a picture, and there's words, and there's people, and all of those. I don't know what yours is, but maybe somebody said something to you that put a picture in your mind and you came to faith. There's a good chance you might be a seer. It's possible. What gets you excited the most, pictures or words? That can be another way of knowing. Is there something that, you know, kind of turns your crank, man? What is it? That can be a sign that maybe you're a seer. My friend Allison was telling me a story, the church that she attends. They don't often talk about stuff like this, They don't often talk about things like the prophetic and that. And she was telling me that she was at a small group meeting, and you know, in small groups we all eat food, right? Right. You gotta have. I don't think you're Christian if you don't have food at your. Sometimes we call those eatin' meetings, right? You gotta have an eatin' meeting. That's when the belly Christians show up, right? That's the best part. You gotta have an eatin' meeting. But she was standing next to another woman who was. They were picking their food out or whatever, and just a little conversation ensued. Allison mentioned that she'd had some pretty vivid dreams and not sure what they meant, and just, you know, spiritual conversation in a spiritual environment. And the woman next to her said, "Oh, I have dreams all the time, but I can't talk about them." Broke my heart. Because the church needs it. Church needs to hear when God is speaking to it, right? Whether it's the weirdness of the seer or it's the person who's hearing voices in their head. The point is that God is speaking to his church, and I don't know about you, but I don't want to miss out on anything that he's saying. So those people who are seers, let your freak flag fly, because we need to hear what you're seeing in your head, because the Almighty is speaking. And we dare not miss out what he has in mind. God, I just want to pray for those who see. We prayed last week for those who hear, but we need to pray for those who see. We need to know what the images are that you have put in their heads, that we give them a place to share, a place to mature and to grow as they learn how to communicate with you in those ways. Thank you for putting those people in our midst, in our churches, in our lives, because we need them. We need to know the things that you're communicating, not just to them, but to the rest of us. Oh God, help us to truly connect with you and all of these channels, and that each one of us would take that very seriously, that you are trying to communicate, and we desperately want to know what that is. So those who see, Lord, keep sending them those images. Let them grow in their confidence and faith. You're speaking, and that you have something to say, not just to them, but to the people around them as well. And I thank you in advance for what you're going to do in them and through them. In Jesus' name, amen.